Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Well, hey, good morning. Welcome back to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Kyle. You almost forgot my name there. It sounded like, I guess, because I haven't been here in a while.
Yeah.
So you're good morning.
What's your name again?
Yeah, I'm Michelle. We've had a time or two. How are you today?
I'm good. And you?
Good, good.
Did you have a good week off?
I did. Yeah. Thanks.
And hello to Ron back there on the board making all this sound professional.
Yeah, we have the main man today.
The big man.
Yep.
We have a great show lined up for you today. A couple of great guests. We're going to start off with the news here in a minute. But first, we want to, as always, thank our sponsors, the Department of Small and Local Business Development and the Department of Housing and Community Development. It is their grant dollars to us that helps us produce this show and helps us produce money for businesses to grow in the corridor here on Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. So thank you to DSLBD and DHCD. Fall Fest was a great event. We wrapped up nicely and tidily, and Ron, the main man back there behind the board today, and his crew did a fantastic video compilation of the day. So you can see that on our website, riamainstreet.org. Go take a look at it if you weren't able to join us, or if you were able to join us, and maybe you'll see yourself in the crowd somewhere.
Yeah, it was a great event, great weather, great vendors.
It was perfect. So next up is the holiday market, the Procrastinators Holiday Market. And true to the name of the event, we're late getting it going here.
Okay. Very good.
But save the date for Saturday, December 16th from noon to 6 p.m. that day. We're going to be over in the big open space at 13th and Rhode Island Avenue, the former shopping center there. Now just a big open event space. It's got all these great holiday lights already strung up. Mm-hmm. So it's like a party waiting to happen.
Very good.
Pretty excited about that. So Saturday, December 16th from noon to 6 p.m. for the Procrastinators Holiday Market. You'll find more information on our website, riamainstreet.org, by the time this broadcasts.
don't look today. No.
If you can go back in time,
right,
listeners, to when you're actually, from when you're actually hearing this,
yeah,
it won't be there. Anyway, let's dive in. We are loving this new segment from our neighbor, Aaron. Aaron is here with the news. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Kyle. I'm Aaron Deneu, and this is the news. So this is our fourth installment of the news. So far, we've talked a little bit about Philip Reed, a prominent sculptor that lived in the area. We've talked a little bit about the ties to The Exorcist and the church that sits behind the studio today. And we've done a session on the 203-year anniversary of the War of 1812. And today we're going to talk briefly about Queen's Chapel. And now Queen's Chapel is a historic D.C. Church that was built right around the year 1722. And it sat right where Langdon Elementary School currently sits. And this was a part of a larger estate, the Queen Estate. And the church sat right on the south end of the estate, and this church was really credited for being the very first and essentially the longest continuously operating Catholic church in the city. It no longer sits there, but it does have some controversial and also fascinating claims to history, American history, that is. And I think we've seen with all of our talks so far that some really poignant events have happened right here in Ward 5, and in particular Queen's Chapel. And Queen's Chapel Road runs over here from about Bladensburg Road to Franklin Street, and then it continues on up further. It's named after the chapel that sat there. And that chapel was actually burnt down during three American wars. And really, there's no other spot that I can find in the city that has such a claim to such a historic presence. And the chapel went in around 1722, and at the time there was a rule against spreading the popery in Maryland, and so it was actually illegal to...
Spreading the what?
I know.
The popery.
And what is the popery?
Which is essentially spreading Catholicism in Maryland. So there was actually a law that forbid it. And so the very first church was actually a smokehouse. It sat outside of the plantation. And remember, this whole area was basically trees. The Brooks family and the Queens family took up most of the area. But this church is really well known for being burnt down during the American Revolutionary War. It would be rebuilt again, and it was known for being burnt down during the War of 1812. And then it would be rebuilt once more, and it was burnt down one more time during the Civil War. So you have these three major American wars that happened right there in Langdon Park, and I bet you not very many people know about that. And there's a lot of other stories that we can do little vignettes from, but Queen's Chapel is now called St. Francis de Sales, and it sits on Rhode Island Avenue right across from Casey and Good Food Markets. And so it's still operating. So if you look on the front of it, you actually see a plaque that notes Queen's Chapel's history to it. At the time, the third time it was burnt down when they were going to build a fourth one, they actually built one in the place of the old ones. And then the priest at the time kind of pulled a fast one on the parishioners and decided to relocate it to Rhode Island Avenue because the streetcar was there. And so there was this controversial decision where they basically left that fourth church that they just built and went up to St. Francis de Sales, which is now the location. They don't call it Queen's Chapel anymore. But
very cool. Very cool.
That's today's section of the news.
Very good. We learned a new word, popery. The popery.
Yeah. I was like, why are they putting dried fragrant herbs? <I know. laughs> why is that illegal?
But, okay. Yes.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. Once again, another interesting the news.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Thanks.
So now it's time to check in with Casey at Good Food Market. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Kyle. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
What is going on at the market?
The much-awaited fall and winter menu from Good Food to Go is finally up on the shelves. It's great. We have another new dip, because folks have been really excited with the seven-layer dip and the Green Man hummus. We wanted something that was maybe a little bit more appropriate for these cooler nights, dinners with red wine. You've got friends coming over, and you want something just to put out while you're still getting dinner ready. So we've seen that all of our Asmars products, that's the Mediterranean line, do really well, like those pita chips with the za'atar. We can never keep those in stock, but we have a dip that's called Mediterranean, and you really got to be an olive lover for this one. If you're not into olives, I would maybe say we should try something else for you, but I personally can't eat enough olives, and it's kind of like a tapenade with cheese.
I was going to say, you have to be a cheese lover, too, with that name.
You gotta love cheese. Who doesn't love cheese?
I don't. Sorry.
Michelle,
not cheese.
Doesn't love cheese.
Missing out. And this is that tangy stuff, too. So I would say that maybe not all of our seven-layer dip lovers are going to transfer to the Mediterranean. But if you like that pungent, tangy, tart cheese, the Mediterranean is so yummy. I had it last night for dinner with a bagel. It was great. I ate it with a spoon.
That's some dedication.
Yeah. That's some cheese loving.
Yeah.
But if you're maybe not so into the tart tangy stuff, we have a butternut squash risotto, which I think the butternut squash pasta, we've kept that for the whole year because it's just done so well. And butternut squash is a really easy one to use because it's a storage crop. You know, they're so big. They store so well. And we've been able to get it all year round. And so we've kept the pasta on. But heating up a nice risotto on a cool night, that's some classic Italian comfort food. So we have the butternut squash risotto as well as Brussels sprouts and sweet potatoes in a dish with those ksune meatballs, which is that, like, kind of garlicky, gingery meatball.
Nice.
It's really, really nice. Super comforting. Definitely heat it up. I mean, you don't have to. They come in the cool case, but it's much nicer once you heat them up.
And just for the record, that seven-layer dip, that's a year-round thing.
People love the seven-layer dip. Trina's not going to stop. We're going to keep making those. I can't ever have enough. I think we're probably getting like a dozen or so, and they're gone within a few days.
Yeah.
But we stick it to a dozen each time just to make sure everything's fresh. But yeah, that's clearly a crowd pleaser. I think a lot of people use it for entertaining. It's kind of a treat thing. But yeah, we're gonna keep carrying the seven-layer dip. Promise on that.
Great, great. And you've got all the wine and beer selection to go with all those nice fall
flavors.
Oh
my goodness. I know that we usually talk about the seasonal beers, but let me tell you, I just redid our wine section. We've been slowly adding on things, making more space for the wine, and especially with the holidays coming up. I think I was just staring at the wine section last night, and while we'd been trying to push everything in there just to be up on the shelf and ready for everybody, things were starting to get a little disorganized. So
I've disorganized
taken everything
with wine
down off the shelves, and I've put it all back up, and now it makes sense by region. So for folks who are specifically looking for a Spanish red or looking for maybe a more mild Italian red, those are now all organized by country.
Nice, nice.
And we have this nice small esoteric section for people who maybe want to have something interesting for entertaining, or I don't know, you're having some kind of themed night, but we've got a Turkish red. We have a Carmenere, which is a lesser known Spanish varietal. But we have a lot of really good reds this season. I've definitely beefed up our budget wine section for just, you know, those standard house wines that you have. You want to open a bottle with dinner, but you're not necessarily entertaining. It's not really a special occasion, but you want a little warmth in your belly. We've definitely got those too now.
Every day I want a little warmth in my belly like
a
that.
A little warmth in your belly.
Yeah. Every day is a special
right
occasion.
Now, right? Comfort.
Somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Casey, please remind our listeners where they can find good food markets.
Absolutely. So we're at 20th and Rhode Island. It's 2006 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. We are open 7 days a week for anything that you might need, open till 9 every night. And we are online at goodfoodmarkets.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Fantastic. Thanks, Casey. We'll talk to you
next
week.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Kyle.
Take care.
Okay, we are back with our next guest, and I have to preface this by saying that there is so much talent here in our community, and Ward 5 is full of fascinating people doing fascinating things. And I was just recently introduced to our next guest and immediately welcomed over to his home for this fantastic culinary experience. And so I'm going to sound like I'm gushing here. I don't mean
because you are.
I am. Well, yeah, I am.
And that's okay.
And kind of bragging,
too. And that's okay. I just want to know, you know, you get all the fun invites. Okay. I'm over it. Go ahead. Tell us about our great guest.
You could just point out that you were on vacation.
All right. Okay. All right. Sorry.
You were probably having some fun, having some tropical cocktails somewhere. So
all right.
I just don't even want to hear it.
Okay.
Anyway.
I want to hear about this great, fantastic meal. I'm excited.
All right. So we are welcoming to the show neighbor, storyteller, cook, and author, Jonathan Bardzik. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks, Kyle. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. That's a mouthful.
Well, it's right here on his website, and no pun. I see what you did there.
Right, I know.
Yeah,
I did.
Smart. yeah, Jonathan. Jonathan, you are a performer extraordinaire while creating amazing food, and I don't say that lightly. So, good job
Thank
on
you.
That. Tell us your story, man. Tell us your story. You're a storyteller. Tell us.
So I'm a storyteller, cook, and author. 6 years ago, I moved down to D.C. 13 years ago for a trade association job, like I think a lot of people here. And 6 years ago, started looking for the next big adventure in life. And it this idea came up of doing weekly live cooking demonstrations over at Eastern Market on Capitol Hill. So started getting up every Saturday morning, going out 4 to 5 new dishes a week. We'd bring home fresh food from the market afterwards, develop the next round of dishes, and head back out the next weekend. And probably about a year and a half into that, I realized there was something more here than just a hobby, and it's turned into a full-time career. So anywhere that I can get out and spread joy, build connection between people through food and cooking, I go do it. And that's everything from 11 different farm markets around the D.C. metro area now, corporate team building and storytelling skills workshops, and private in-home teaching dinners where I'll come in and teach a group of people through an entire dinner menu.
Nice. Wow.
So how did you get involved with cooking? I mean, cooking seems to be the bridge to the other items. And so, I want to know how you involved storytelling in that. And I mean, author, obviously.
So here's the origin of the cooking piece. I grew up with, I have two amazing parents, and my mom's greatest joy in life was being a mother and a homemaker. And so there's always a garden, partially because my dad started a business the year I was born and there wasn't enough money to go to the grocery store all the time. But there was always fresh food. She put up most of the vegetables that we ate through the winter. She baked all the bread that I ate until I was 4 years old. So there was always this really cool, good, fresh food around. At the end of college, I went to a dinner party with some folks I had met during a summer job. Watched them cook this really cool pasta sauce. And it was like all the hip, trendy, mid-90s ingredients, portobello mushrooms and capers and lots of basil. And I walked out realizing I had memorized this dish, so I started cooking it for anyone who would eat it. And I graduated from college halfway through the year, so I had the spring at home, which, you know, you're going from like thousands of friends to zero all of a sudden. And so I'm hanging out with my folks and decided I'd cook dinner once a week. So week number one is this pasta sauce. Week number two was some tacos. Week three, I'm sitting there with a giant stack of cookbooks on the table at 10 o'clock in the morning, putting together 6-dish menus, shopping for 3 hours in the afternoon, not being helpful at all because I don't know how to do any of this, so I'm now serving dinner at 10 o'clock at night, a tradition which my husband will tell you we've continued. So that's the origin of cooking, and I just never got out of the kitchen. So that is my relaxation. I'll be in there for hours a day. The storytelling piece, when I first started doing this, I called a friend of my husband's who was a former writer for Bon Appetit magazine and was doing some video and writing in Columbus, Ohio, with the local newspaper and television station at the time. And I said, "Do you have any advice?" She said, "I have one piece of advice. Never stop talking." When you're cooking live, unlike on TV, where they're like, "Hey, we just threw this in a skillet, and look, magically, it's done." That doesn't happen live. So if that takes 20 minutes to cook, you've got to talk for 20 minutes, and you become a storyteller.
Wow. That makes sense.
Yeah. And you really hone that on a regular basis, doing Facebook Live broadcasts of what you're working on and different events that you do. I was lucky enough to be included in one of your hashtag test kitchen events earlier this week, and saw you seamlessly go from, you know, juggling. You have like three different things going at the same time in the cooking process, and all of the people that were there, you were talking with them, entertaining them, and suddenly you were Facebook Live-ing the whole thing, and it was just like seamless. Oh, and by the way, you were also telling your husband, you know, some tweaks to jot down on the recipe that he was tracking for you for your, what, sixth cookbook?
Fourth. But okay. The fifth and sixth are actually already in progress.
See? You've got this down, man. You got it down.
It's so much fun. And it's interesting. If I had to describe to someone what I do and I had to pick only one word, I think I'd pick entertainer even more than cook. When I was in my early 20s, I graduated from college, came home and announced to my parents that I thought I wanted to go to culinary school, which I'm sure after writing that last check for college was thrilling information for them. And my mom immediately just said, absolutely not. It's the worst life ever. You'll be up all night. You'll never be able to hold down a relationship. And in hindsight, she was dead on. One of the things I've learned about myself is that I love doing new things all the time. And I have the greatest respect for restaurant chefs who get in there and turn out every single dish identically every time. It's a skill. It's a gift. I think it would drive me insane. And so I think I've managed to take cooking to a place where I'm constantly in front of new audiences, coming up with new dishes, working with new ingredients.
Nice.
And it sounds like it started from the beginning, your idea of working with fresh food, right from
Right from Mom's Garden.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is important. And it's such a big thing now. And we have a lot of access to that in D.C., which is great.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff that you cranked out earlier.
Okay. I want to know what it was. Let's talk about this menu that I missed.
Well, there were like a gazillion things, all pumpkin based.
All pumpkin based.
Hmm. And the soup. The fish chowder. It was spectacular. But okay, excuse me. I'll let you tell us. You're the storyteller.
Yeah, tell us about the food.
So let's start with pumpkin. It's pumpkin season. Mm-hmm. Pumpkin is delicious. And there's one basic rule you have to follow to make sure pumpkin is going to be delicious. And that is, if it's big, round, and orange, or small, round, and orange, and looks like it belongs on your front porch, that's exactly where it should stay. It tastes terrible. It was bred to look pretty. It was never meant to be eaten.
Ah, so maybe that's why I don't like much pumpkin.
So the really good eating pumpkins are all those funky, warty ones. So bring those home.
Okay.
100 years ago in the U.S., pumpkin was a really important food crop. And all of those pumpkins were bred to taste good and have good texture and everything else. And then we decided that the big round orange ones would look pretty for decoration. So think of them as a cut flower. So we took a few different pumpkins, and I had a few dishes that we served up from an event I'd done the night before. There are a few apartment buildings in D.C. that bring me in regularly to entertain their residents. So we'd done a pumpkin demo and served up some leftover pumpkin curry, which
that sounds interesting.
Delicious. And all of these are pretty quick and simple. They're designed to be served up in about 20, 25 minutes at a live cooking demonstration. So they've got to be easy. I'm usually standing there with a single burner, a knife, and a cutting board, so no special equipment required. But the two brand new dishes we created, the first one was a New England-style fish chowder with pumpkin. So some celery, onions, pumpkin, a little bit of potato in there, some fresh cod, a little bit of cream and buttermilk because it's chowder.
Right. Need that.
And then some fresh parsley right out of the backyard.
Wow.
And it was hearty. We used a fairy tale pumpkin, which is this beautiful sort of orange-brown pumpkin with the really deep lobes to it, the deep lines in it. Really bright, sort of deep, rich orange color to it. It's a gorgeous pumpkin to cook with. And then the second dish that we did was a pumpkin quiche. And I basically just modified a pumpkin pie recipe. So rather than putting in the sugar, we added some goat cheese, fresh kale, some sautéed shiitake mushrooms, and quick homemade pie crust. It was delicious.
Wow.
Delicious does not do it justice. It was quite spectacular is what it was.
And we do this every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks on Tuesday night, I get together. My husband, we have a friend who's a photographer who photographs all the new dishes we prepare. We record them all. They eventually go up on my blog at jonathanbardzik.com. And so all year long we're creating brand new recipes. In 6 years, I've created nearly 800 recipes now.
Wow. Well, you know, I want to be selfless here and just say that as a neighbor and now new friend, I would be certainly willing to come and partake in some of this deliciousness.
We would love to have you.
Very good. This sounds amazing.
You just give and give and give, Michelle.
I know. I can't help it.
And
I'm nice
for
like that.
Listeners who want to be there with you,
yes.
They can always follow along on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. and we put questions out there. So a lot of the recipes get developed with feedback from our social media audience, which is really fun.
That's great. So I haven't looked at any of your cookbooks, but I know that you said on the live demonstrations, they're pretty simple recipes for people to do at home. Are most of your recipes like that, or are some of them super detailed where you have to be?
No, I would. So I would say out of my cookbooks, maybe 10 to 20% of the recipes in them take longer than 25 minutes. None of them are difficult.
Wow.
I've actually found, interestingly, that the more that I cook, I found a distinction between recipes that are time consuming and recipes that are difficult or require a different level of skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of, I think we very often mix that up. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of recipes I encounter where it takes time and there are multiple components and it's a 3-hour recipe, but you don't have to know anything more than sauteing and boiling water and a little bit of knife work to get it done. There's just a lot more happening in it.
Right. Okay.
It's speaking of knife work, one of the things that has intimidated me about doing anything with fresh pumpkin is actually dealing with the pumpkin. And you had, particularly on that, what did you call it? A fairy tale? Fairy tale pumpkin with the deep lobes. I don't think you realized it, but you totally put me at ease about dealing with it now, because you just took a knife and sliced off a lobe like you would slice a piece of cake out of a round cake, you know?
But you got to have the knives. I mean, you got to have a good knife, right?
I think every home should have a good chef's knife.
Right.
It's like a hammer or screwdriver. It's your most basic kitchen tool.
Right.
Keep it sharp. You guys may know this. Do we have a local hardware store that does knife sharpening?
I don't know if Annie's does or not, but there's also a place in Union Market, the guy at Union Market that does the knife sharpening in there. He's great. He's great.
I would have your knives as a home cook sharpened at least twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
The two dates I find are easiest to remember. One is Thanksgiving, which is kind of the Super Bowl of vegetable prep. and then 6 months later is Mother's Day. So easy dates to remember. And then if you have a honing steel, which you if you've ever gotten a knife set, mm-hmm. you probably have one of those kicking around.
Mm-hmm.
I would hone the knife once a week. What honing does is you use when they sharpen the knife, they sharpen it to a really, really fine edge. And as you use that on your cutting board, that knife can bend over a little, get nicks in it, get a little wavy. And so the honing steel straightens it back out and keeps that sharp edge straight and effective over a longer period of time. If your knife's dull and you hone it, congratulations. You now have a beautifully straight, still completely dull knife.
It's true. It's true.
So you've got to do both.
Good to know. I've honed the heck out of knives. I'm getting nowhere with this. I'm obviously not honing correctly. That's good to know. But yeah, because I always thought you had to cut the top off and gut the whole thing and then deal with the whole thing right then. But no, you were like just kind of cutting it off as you needed it. That was pretty awesome.
So we can expect some kind of pumpkin meal from you in the future, it sounds like.
We'll go generally with the future.
All right. All right. Yes. That sounds good. So, Jonathan, your book, is your newest book this 23 vinaigrettes?
Yes.
Are there really 23 vinaigrettes, and are they magical?
They are. They are magical.
I need to hear about this.
Every single demo that I do, I make a vinaigrette. And had so many salads that I finally said, I should, and I never have a recipe card for it, because usually when I go out to do a demo, I bring recipe cards for everything I present. But the salad is, it's between us and every single one of your listeners now, it's kind of that filler dish. If you've ever acted in Shakespeare, Shakespeare is in this particular meter, right? And so you can't fake it. You can't just make up a line.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this line that you can say if you forget what you're saying, which is in perfect iambic pentameter, which is, "My lord, I know not what to say." and everyone on stage now knows that they have to cue you and get you into your next line. So let's make a salad is kind of the equivalent of that when you're doing cooking demonstrations. You're like, "Oh, this dish is going to take 20 minutes longer to cook than I thought. Let's get a salad together." So it's 23 vinaigrettes, roughly seasonally organized with fresh ingredients. Vinaigrettes are just so versatile, and it's not just salads, but it's using them as marinades, as sauces. One of my favorites right now, and we tried this the other night in Test Kitchen, I have a pumpkin salad that we created a couple years ago. It was right about this time of year, a week a lot like last week when we were sweating like August and October, and we were grilling in the backyard, and I thought, just have some potato salad. And I walk in the house, and there's a big pumpkin sitting on the counter. So we cubed that up, blanched it quickly so it had about the texture of a potato salad, tossed it with some capers and some olives, and then made a maple, sherry, and grainy mustard vinaigrette for it.
Wow.
And it was off the charts good.
I'm so mad at you right now.
There was a lot of cheese involved.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm over it now. This sounds really good. I'm not even that much of a pumpkin person, but you're making it sound delicious. I can definitely see where the entertainment comes in and the storytelling. Does it often involve the food that you're preparing, your stories, and kind of go from there?
It does. It's and there are stories at this point that I tell often that are sort of ready to go when I need to fill some time or I'm trying to talk about a particular technique, but every single one of the stories started by being in a live demonstration and just having to fill some time, and mm-hmm. out came the story. So every single one of them is true. There's a story I tell about setting the Christmas dinner table on fire.
Oh, gosh.
And every time someone meets my parents who's heard this story, they go, so this didn't happen, right? I mean, like, this story's way too over the top. And they go, oh, no,
that happened.
No, we talk about this every year at Christmas.
So are we going to hear the story?
All right,
I'll tell you the story. I'll give you the quick version. So took over cooking Christmas dinner from my mom when I was 21 years old. She's one of seven. I'm one of three. So there were usually 10 of us, immediate family, older relatives on Christmas Day. 2 days later, her six brothers and sisters, all married, all with children, would descend upon the house, 40 people in all. She'd cook a second meal. By the time I'm 20 or 21, not so much fun for her anymore. So I said, at least let me take over Christmas Day. She says yes. And the third year I'm doing this, I decide that I'm going to make beef Wellington and baked Alaska.
Ooh.
I'd never made either of these before, and this is sort of early internet, so I couldn't find them online. The 1970s ruined beef Wellington and baked Alaska for everyone, so they weren't in any cookbooks. My mom finally finds the recipes in an old Julia Child TV series cookbook, buys the ingredients, and I open the book up at 11:30 at night on Christmas Eve. First set of instructions is how to make the 24-hour marinade for the beef.
Oh.
So I had a lot less experience and a lot more confidence back then and thought, I'm good. So I read the next set of instructions, which is how you make the pastry from scratch that you're going to wrap the beef in. Still thought I was good. In fact, I was so confident I went right ahead and made the ice cream and the sponge cake from scratch for the baked Alaska. You probably see where this is headed. My family, the next night at 11:30, finally sat down completely irate to Christmas dinner. At 12:30, I bring out the baked Alaska, and you usually flame some cherry brandy over the top, which I had never done before. Mm. So I didn't know it helps if you warm it up a little bit. I end up pouring an entire bottle of cherry brandy over this baked Alaska, none of it burning off. By the end of dessert, my entire family's asleep, except for my 11-year-old brother, who is completely trashed. At which point, I announce I'm going to make this same meal 1 year later and get it right, and for some reason, they say yes. So fast forward 12 months, December 25th, 1 year later, 8:30 at night, beautiful beef Wellington hits the table. And at 9:30, I pull the baked Alaska from the oven. It's enormous. It's so big. The platter it's on will only fit on one tray my mom has. It's about a half an inch bigger all the way around. So I put it on the tray, carry it in the dining room, put it on the hot pads in the middle of the table. I've learned my lesson on flaming alcohol. So there's a small pan of warm cherry brandy over on the sideboard, drop and match blue flames. Perfect. Dim the lights, pour some over the top, smiling faces all around the table. It's magic. There's more alcohol in the pan than I poured over the top, and this is the moment when Norman Rockwell should have been in my family's dining room capturing this beauty. And there's more alcohol in the pan than I poured over the top, which is when it leaps right over the edge of the tray into the fringe on the hot pad, setting the dining room table on fire.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm fortunately still wearing an oven mitt, so I'm stopping up the flames with my hand, and I finally get the table extinguished and decide maybe the alcohol shouldn't be in the dining room anymore. Let's go to the kitchen. So I pick up the pan and start walking forward. Now, if you ever walk forward with a pan of flaming alcohol, you may notice the flames jet backwards. And you still have a lot more hair than this.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm now, for those of you who are listening and not seeing, I have no hair. I'm now walking sideways with this pan over to the sliding door out to the brick patio, and I open it up. It's December 25th in New England. There's a brisk breeze blowing, and there's no way I'm getting out the door at the same time as this pan. So I finally throw it out onto the bricks where it still burns itself out. And they still let me cook Christmas dinner every year.
Wow.
Well, you do put on a show, apparently.
Well, there's the story. Mm-hmm. Wow. So people can hire you, you said, in-home, but you also do corporate-type food events. And what is the purpose of that? Is that like a team building?
Yeah, so I've been doing two different kinds of events, and they're both really fun. And they can involve food or not. I think they're more fun when they involve food. But
why not?
I know
food?
Often corporate events are happening in spaces where there's a food contract, a hotel or a convention center. And so I've also developed it so I can go in there without food and still talk through. But the events start with me telling some stories and then the group starting to share some food stories with each other. Mm-hmm. And most of us have probably been to a really uncomfortable team building event where you are sat down next to someone you barely know and told to share deeply intimate things about.
Or don't like.
Right?
Sorry. Yeah.
So, but food stories are easy, right? I mean, asking you to tell me about your favorite food and then say, so who made it and where did you last eat it? Who was sitting there with you? You're now sharing things about yourself in a way that is accessible. Everybody eats.
Mm-hmm.
And telling the story of an organization has become really important, right? We know we can't all compete just on the list of services that we offer. And so it's, why is the way that you deliver that better, more impactful for your client than everyone else who's competing against you? And so I can also use those food stories to teach people storytelling skills and then turn those toward telling the story of their organization.
That sounds pretty exciting.
But you're not a caterer.
I am not a caterer.
Well, let's be very clear on this.
We were joking about this the other night. So I think every business draws a line around something that they don't do. Mm-hmm. And I am not a caterer, although it came up that I have just catered two events in the last 2 weeks. Only because the right people asked. And the first one was a wedding for 150 people out on a farm.
Ah, wow.
Which was intense. And it was for the son and now daughter-in-law of one of the first farmers who really supported me in this.
Oh, okay.
And you couldn't say no to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the only right answer to that was yes.
Absolutely. So when you first came in, you were talking about a test kitchen. I overheard that. What is that all about?
So every 2 weeks to develop new recipes, we go to the farm markets over the weekend, grab fresh seasonal ingredients. Sometimes there's a theme, sometimes not. And get together and work on developing usually 2 to 3 new recipes every 2 weeks. So it's every other Tuesday. This past Tuesday was one. In a week and a half now, we'll be developing Thanksgiving side dishes. And playing, it's cauliflower, kale, broccoli, Brussels sprout season. There certainly will be more pumpkin and squash, probably some potatoes, turnips starting to show up at the farm markets. So it's, from the beginning, one of the things that I started doing was tasting food. And I realized that I hadn't tasted food this way before. I mean, we eat all the time. Mm-hmm. But I would literally chop things up raw, put it in my mouth and go, what does this taste like? And you start to realize things. There's a dish we did a few years ago that was kind of a Hail Mary pass. We didn't have many ingredients, and so we made a fresh pasta dish with ricotta cheese, some crispy prosciutto, and strawberries. And the strawberries seem like they shouldn't fit at all, except when you start tasting fruit, you very often realize there's a lot more acidity in there and less sugar than you think there will be. And this was early season, so the strawberries had particularly less sugar than they would 2 or 3 weeks later. We'll sit down with turnips and taste them and go, okay, are these super mustardy? If one of the fun things that we have discovered is there's a real difference between super farm fresh ingredients and the ones that make it into some of the chain grocery stores. And they obviously have a challenge, right? Those foods have had to be harvested and moved through a warehouse and shipped over long distances. And it's wonderful that we have access to that. But things like turnips develop those really strong mustardy flavors that a lot of people think they don't like while they're stored. You get a good farm fresh turnip out of a farm market and you bite in. I have a friend who has a farm and we'll eat those almost like apples.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll sit down, taste the foods and go, okay, what does this want to be this week?
Hmm.
And very cool. Speaking of turnips, we've had everything from turnip hash to turnip latkes.
Wow.
Which are delicious. And we'll definitely be showing up on the Thanksgiving table this year.
Sounds good.
So looking at your website, you've got a wealth of information there. Obviously, access to your books. You get three out now. Fourth one about to come out. So what you've got now is Fresh and Magical Vinaigrettes. You've got Seasons to Taste. And Simple Summer Recipe for Cooking and Entertaining with Ease. Those are all available through your website. You've also got videos.
I do have a few videos up on the website. And if you check out my YouTube page, which is also just my name, Jonathan Bartzik, there are another 35 videos up there.
Yeah. I mean, the very first video, the best mashed potatoes ever.
Mm.
And that was the first thing I watched, and my wife Meryl looked at me and said, "I love him." So big fan there. Information on how to roast pumpkin, rich homemade turkey stock, Brussels sprouts, so the don't listen blue cheese, mustard, butter, but good stuff here. Your calendar of events where people can find you to watch your demonstrations. And all of that is on jonathanbartzik.com. That's JonathanBartzik, B as in boy, ARD as in dog, Z as in zebra,
As in zebra, yeah.
IK, jonathanbartzik.com. You're on Facebook. It's all the fun social medias. You do your, Test Kitchen Live on Facebook and all of those things.
And he's a local Ward 5 resident.
Yep.
So support him. Look up his business.
So what's next on your calendar?
Let's see. The leading up to Thanksgiving, I am doing two farm market demos almost every single weekend. Thanksgiving is kind of my end of my farm market season. So you'll see me everywhere from Eastern Market and Bloomingdale out to Fairfax and Rockville. We'll have a few more test kitchens between now and then. And next week, I'm in another apartment building. I'm doing a corporate training on storytelling for the Cosmos Club. So busy time of year.
And it looks like you go all over the place. Looks like you're going to somewhere in St. Louis, Missouri. In Annapolis.
Have knife, will travel.
Yes. Yes.
Do they let you travel with that? Do you have to pack it?
You have to check your knives.
Yep.
Check your knives. Those don't come on the plane.
Check your knives. That's right. But all I'm right. A chef.
So all that and more at jonathanbartzik.com. Jonathan?
One last thing coming up soon. It's Thanksgiving, obviously. And it's one of those meals that I think is particularly fun and also challenging. We're cooking this giant piece of meat, this turkey. It's probably the biggest piece of meat that most people will tackle in a given year. And I find I forget so much of what I know about turkey in the 12 months between the one time of year we cook it. So during Thanksgiving week on Tuesday and Wednesday for 48 hours straight, I open up a helpline on my Facebook page.
Oh,
so
wow.
People are welcome to come onto my Facebook page, post questions, and I'll answer all of them from, hey, I need one more side dish, I need something that will travel well, or I've got this problem with my turkey, what do I do?
So, you know, Thanksgiving is my hands-down favorite holiday
absolutely.
Of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the food. And we always have turkey, and you know, there's a big discussion of, do you brine the turkey? Do you smoke the turkey? Do you just slap some butter on it and roast it? What's your favorite way to do a turkey?
I like brining. I always get my turkey the Monday before Thanksgiving. It goes in the brine no later than Tuesday morning. And I cook, so I do things that nobody else should waste time doing. But I read an article a few years ago that you could make gravy by just reducing enough stock rather than using any thickener. And this seemed like a throwdown. So I start making stock the Sunday before Thanksgiving, and you just go pick up the cheapest turkey parts you can. And luckily, living in D.C., there's a lot of turkey necks and turkey legs around, turkey wings. So bring those home, make a good stock. You can do that now and freeze it. Mm-hmm. And because it takes long enough to reduce all of that, I roast a second turkey the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, so I have all the good pan drippings. Make my gravy on Wednesday, and then that's ready to go for Thursday.
Wow. Nice, nice.
So where's Thanksgiving going to be? No. Okay.
Right over here in Eckington, there is always an extra seat at the table.
Okay, all right. I'm following you home. We got to go. No.
So I always run out of room in my oven on Thanksgiving Day. So I was actually tossing around the idea of putting a turkey on the grill. What do you think about that?
Grilled turkey is delicious.
So when I put a chicken on the grill, I put a whole chicken beer can style, you know, with a little, I call it a violated chicken.
So you want to know if you can violate a turkey is what you're asking.
I can't figure out how to be able to actually close the lid of the grill because a chicken barely fits in there right now. Maybe I just need a better grill. Yeah, I think that's a good excuse to go buy a bigger grill.
Exactly. So. Hey, they're on sale now.
Good point. I was thinking about doing that. Maybe I'll ask you to come over and we can do a sample test kitchen.
Yeah.
Grilled turkey test kitchen
sounds
amazing.
And I can walk to your house. That sounds good.
I like it. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for all of the good food you're cranking out and all the good food ideas. Folks, if you want to learn more about Jonathan, again, visit jonathanbardzik.com and all the related social media. Check him out at some of these farmers markets demos. These are great opportunities to see him in action. You can pick up the fresh ingredients while you're there.
While you're there, exactly.
Farmers. Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you.
Kyle, Michelle, thank you.
All right. So that is going to wrap up another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
See ya.